This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg. Coming up later in the show, we are going to have our weekly news discussion with Dave Thompson, and we are going to look at this concept of daycare as infrastructure. Normally, you think infrastructure, you think things like roads and bridges, but daycare, an essential part of making things work. And speaking of making things work, it is the first day of our fall member drive. And joining me now in studio is Matt O'Lean. You will hear him later on the show as part of our normal Friday movie review. But he is in studio to talk about how you can be a member of the Prairie Public infrastructure. Everything that you hear is made possible by members. We are 40 years old. And whether you've been listening for 40 years or one day, let's take action now. Make you a sustaining member of Prairie Public. Call or text the word donate to 800-359-4145 or give online at prairiepublic.org. Matt, it's a great day to become a member of public radio. And, you know, we always love having you on Main Street.
I love coming on here, Ashley. And it's always a pleasure to be with you on Main Street doing the film review. One of the things I appreciate most about this program is the showcasing of the arts. We've done a really good job over the years. Some years ago, Bill Thomas told me, let's do the film review segment. And I'm like, great, we can do that. I love movies. But Main Street is also about music, literature, the theater arts, you know, what's happening this coming weekend in the arts, things like that. You hear about all of it. You learn about the exciting things arts organizations in our region are doing. And you get to enjoy the sounds of these interesting voices without the noise and clutter of commercials. It's just great conversation made possible by our listener members. So make that decision today. Become one now by going to prairiepublic.org or call or text donate to 800-359-4145.
We love those people who want to act on the very first day, and we're going to offer you a little extra incentive, a dollar-for-dollar match. So there is this magical group of Prairie Public members who pitch in something extra that says, here's my membership, here's something extra that will come in if we hear from other people. So take your one-time gift. Maybe you're doing $180 a year. With this member challenge fund, it becomes $360. You can do this a couple of easy ways. You can give online at prairiepublic.org or call or text the word donate to 800-359-4145. Many thanks to the reliability of our sustaining members. It is because of sustaining members that we don't have to come on the air as often or as long as we have had to in the past. It's a shorter drive, and that's why we just get right to the point. Help us out. That's where you come in.
That's right, Ashley. Those sustaining memberships not only help, as you said, reduce the amount of on-air fundraising time, they're just very convenient for people. You don't get that letter that arrives in your mailbox every year to renew. You can set up the monthly contribution of your choice easily at prairiepublic.org. Or call or text donate to 800-359-4145. You can also choose to have it deducted from a major credit card or from a checking account. The setup takes a couple of minutes, is all. Sit back, let your donation do its thing each month. Your gift helps with the cost of programming and equipment and all the human capital it takes, infrastructure that Ashley mentioned, to make Main Street and everything you enjoy about Prairie Public sound so great. You can make your donation at prairiepublic.org or when you call or text donate to 800-359-4145.
And joining me now is Zaina Berg. She is the Kids Count Coordinator for North Dakota. Zaina, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And Jessica Hake, she is a board member with the North Dakota Women's Network. Jessica, thank you for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
So we're having you both on the show today because there is a report out of Kids Count that argues that the state could benefit economically by considering childcare a form of infrastructure that can be good for the economy. And so, Zaina, I want to start with you because infrastructure, we normally think of things like roads, bridges. And when it comes to an economic impact, okay, those are ways that we get to work. Why are you arguing that daycare should be considered a kind of infrastructure?
Yeah, we need accessible and affordable childcare in order for parents to stay and enter into the workforce and then ultimately contribute to the North Dakota economy. We want to see more support for childcare so that parents can find the type of care that works for their needs and that childcare businesses can afford to pay their workers adequate wages. You know, currently the system, it's falling short in both of these two areas. So really thinking about how do we make better investments to meet those needs. Really, this report kind of frames childcare as an economic issue because the economy depends on childcare. And the timing of this, you know, we're really thinking about how North Dakota has an incredible opportunity with some of the federal relief money to think about how we can start building that infrastructure so that we can support working families and businesses.
So what does improved infrastructure access to daycare mean to you? More daycares, more employees, more hours, some of all?
Yeah, it's a complex question. So in some communities, we find that access to care is really falling short. So this means based on the number of children we think need childcare, there currently aren't enough slots for that number of children. So in some communities, we're really thinking about how do we increase the number of childcare availability so that parents then do have the option, you know, to travel a reasonable distance to, you know, find the childcare that works for them and their kids. But it's more than just simply having enough access. We also need care that meets the hours that parents are working. So, you know, the data really shows us that childcare during non-traditional hours is really in short supply. And so thinking about how do we meet the needs of parents who might be, you know, working shift or overnight hours, and what does that look like in terms of accessing childcare? It's also more than that, though, right? You talked a little bit about paying workers, and we really find that there's this kind of balance between, you know, parents already can't afford childcare. Childcare in North Dakota, it's as expensive as college tuition at UND or NDSU. But also childcare businesses, they don't have a lot of extra income to really be, you know, paying their workers adequate wages. And so a childcare worker making the median wage, they hover just above poverty level for a family of three. So really thinking about how do we better support these childcare businesses so that they can pay their workers, you know, better wages, without having to raise the cost for parents that, you know, already it's out of reach for many, many families in North Dakota.
Jessica, in addition to being a board member with the North Dakota Women's Network, you are one of those former policymakers that people like Zana are trying to work with to try to get this considered on a different level. I'm just wondering how you approached an issue like this when you were an elected official and how that might be different as, I guess I'll just call you a private citizen.
Sure. Well, when I was in the legislature, I did hold some community forums. I held two of them on childcare. And so I would really encourage parents who are seeing these obstacles, having to make, as I am now with a set of four-year-old twins, and all of what we have had to go through to find quality childcare that we can afford and the decisions we've had to make to put them into preschool, to share your story with your elected official. Make it known that either you as a business owner cannot find workers because there's no childcare available, or the childcare doesn't provide the right hours, or, you know, there's no slots and they have to drive 45 minutes one way to find childcare. Share your stories is what I would say, to really reflect what is happening in the state of North Dakota around access to quality, affordable childcare.
Yeah, I'm thinking four-year-old twins, what kind of job do you need to have to be even able to put them in daycare?
Sure. So I work at an office job during the day, and when when the twins first arrived, my husband and I made a decision that we would both work, and I would work during the day and he would stay at home with the children. And then he worked in the evening as a cook and I stayed at home with the children at night. So the reach for us to put two infants in childcare was too much for our family budget. So we adjusted the hours that my husband was working to make the shift to, well, just adjust our hours to keep them at home instead of paying that infant fee for two children.
Well, I want to zero in on that idea of, okay, we are just going to flex around the situation at hand. Because I wonder, do we end up in this cycle of locking people into lower wage jobs because they need the flexibility more than they need the money in some regards?
Yeah, I mean, I think it really can be an obstacle. And then when we did go out looking for childcare, I went to the Child Care Aware website and read all of the reviews to find quality childcare. And so we ended up waiting two additional months to get into the childcare provider that we wanted after my husband started his own business. But yeah, it can, to get around that situation, he stayed on as a cook because those were the hours that served our family and was only able to start his own business when the opportunity provided that we were able to find quality childcare for both of the children that we could afford.
Zaina, are there areas around the state that are particularly hard hit by either the hours or the distance for the daycare options?
Yeah, so we have a map in our report where we looked at where the access might be falling particularly short. And we found, so on a statewide level, the current supply meets about 88% of the estimated demand. And in 14 counties in particular, they met less than 60%. And so those are the counties where we're really thinking about there being kind of this big gap between supply and demand for childcare. And so those are the counties where families might be traveling, you know, longer distances to find that open slot somewhere else in the county. You know, they might be making those really tough decisions since there isn't a childcare open close by that meets their needs. You know, what does that look like for their family and how can they make it work? And so there wasn't a clear trend for me to be able to succinctly describe, you know, here. It really just depended on the county and it varied throughout the state. There are some counties that are close to meeting that demand, but there are other counties that fall drastically short.
I'm wondering, when we're thinking about daycare as infrastructure, Zaina, are you wanting to use that term just in the sense of, okay, let's reframe how we think about this? We need roads to get to work. We also need daycare so that we can work. Or is this actually a designation where if daycare situations become infrastructure, it opens a whole new pool of funding, for example?
Yeah, the conversation kind of at a federal level, I think, is what is driving this conversation around childcare as infrastructure and likening that to, you know, the more traditional types of infrastructure.
Okay.
From our perspective as, you know, taking a look at childcare, what we found is that there are really gaps in access, in accessing high quality care, and then for parents to be able to afford that care. And all of those pieces are really playing into this bigger problem is that, you know, North Dakota's economy depends on childcare and having access to affordable childcare for families. And so, you know, whether we classify it a certain way or not, the problem still exists. We still need better investments in childcare in order to see a system that exists where families have the options to find childcare that meets their needs.
And so you're looking at that money from a state or federal level then?
So the kind of timing of this report in this moment is that the American Rescue Plan Act, which was one of the federal relief programs passed this most recent spring, there's actually $76 million specifically set aside for childcare in North Dakota. And so thinking about that money in particular, how can we use the American Rescue Plan money to really start thinking about some of these systemic challenges that the childcare industry faces, to really build kind of a long-term solution so that, you know, we can provide more access, that we provide more high-quality care, and that childcare workers are paid more. What can we do now in this moment with that funding to make a long-term impact?
Mm-hmm. Are you able to work with schools?
Yeah, so when we're talking about this money in particular, that money goes directly to childcare programs that are run through the state licensing program.
Okay.
But I do appreciate the question about schools, because much of the data that we focused on was for children ages 0 to 5. So really, okay, that before school age, that age range. But before and after school programs are also really important form of childcare for older children who, you know, may attend school during the day, but then need some type of childcare before or after school. It's a little bit harder to, you know, precisely measure demand for school age children. There was a report recently that did kind of estimate for every child that is attending an after-school program, there are 2 more children waiting in North Dakota. Mm. So we do know that this problem is bigger than just the, you know, young children, you know, before they enter school. We're really also thinking about how do we create more access to before and after-school care for older children as well.
Jessica, what is North Dakota Women's Network's interest in this?
So North Dakota Women's Network seeks to improve the lives of women through communication, legislation, and increased public awareness. So really, I mean, childcare is critical to any family to get people out there and contributing to the economy in a way that's effective. So whether it's a female business owner looking for employees and mm-hmm. they're, you know, unable to find because they have limited access to childcare, or they are a woman trying to figure out what happens now that she has children and she has limited childcare options, and she's trying to find something that works with the hours that her job demands. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're interested in lifting up this concern, because the people who work in childcares often are women. I know all of the teachers at my children's preschool right now are women, and one of them has to have a weekend job to make ends meet. I mean, what are we telling those women who've gone to school, who've done the work, who are, you know, forming the thoughts and minds of our little people, our future leaders, our future workers, the value that we place on them when we tell them they have to get a second job on the weekend? I really think that this is just an overall issue that impacts women, families, business owners, all of the, everyone.
And we have been discussing a Kids Count report that asks the question, should childcare be considered a form of infrastructure? And what does that mean for the North Dakota economy? You can read the report at ndkidscount.org. And you can also find out more information about the Women's Network at ndwomen.org. Jessica Hake is a board member with the North Dakota Women's Network. Jessica, thank you for your time today.
Yes, thank you.
Zana Berg is the Kids Count Coordinator for North Dakota and also for South Dakota and Montana. Thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you.
So conversations like that underscore why something is important, even if you're not the kind of person who has kids, now do you get a richer understanding of why things like daycares are necessary. That's what we like to do on a show like Main Street, is not just tell you what's happening, but why that matters and the kinds of people who are impacted by it. You are listening to Main Street for that kind of storytelling. I'm here with Matt Olean because it is our September member drive. We're asking you to contribute online right now at prairiepublic.org, or when you call or text the word donate to 800-359-4145. It only takes a couple of minutes, and whatever dollar amount fits into your budget.
And Ashley, every dollar is getting a dollar-for-dollar boost today on this first day of our September membership drive, a pot of matching money to soar your gift to greater heights, if you will. Prairie Public is celebrating 40 years on the radio. 1981 is when it started. How about joining us as a $40 a month sustaining member? Your pledge will be doubled to $80 a month, meaning your total annual impact on Prairie Public is $960. Wow, that's a big deal. So call or text the word donate to 800-359-4145 or give at prairiepublic.org.
And coming in at that $40 a month level, we will send you three excellent thank you gifts that'll show your love of Prairie Public. You get a fun pair of 40th anniversary Prairie Public socks. I have a pair. They're adorable. They have this great 1981 sort of look to them. That is also apparent on our Boombox coffee mug. Remember Boomboxes? Oh, man. And I bet if you are a fan of Dakota Datebook, you will love the second volume of the Dakota Datebook book. So give us a call or text the word donate to 800-359-4145 or go to prairiepublic.org. Dakota Datebook, that book coming out in a second edition because it's so popular. It is one of those features on Prairie Public that people go out of their way to listen to.
And I have been in my driveway or at the parking ramp at the Radisson, not able to kind of get out of the car,
right?
Because Dakota Datebook is on. Either Merrill Pepcorn or Bill Thomas is telling us about something. We know this because people tell us how much they appreciate these 3-minute vignettes on North Dakota's eccentric characters, places, and interesting history. We also see it in our online platforms and how many thousands of times Dakota Datebooks are shared. We hear from people who have lived here their whole lives and from newcomers eager to learn about their new home. There's work behind the scenes, of course, writers, researchers. It doesn't all just, you know, come out of someone's mouth. And, of course, the voice of Dakota Datebook, Merrill Pepcorn, that should be applauded today. That's where you come in. Your contribution in any amount helps make the things you appreciate about Prairie Public possible. Call or text donate to 800-359-4145 or give at prairiepublic.org.
And why do we ask this? Well, it's because our business model is completely different from the other radio and TV stations out there. We're non-commercial. That means we're supported by members. We are not able to sell ads, and that means we're not able to make money by selling that advertising. So we come to you directly instead and say, all this time that we weren't playing commercials, can you help us out? We added additional programming, behind the scenes information. You get to know how, why, what happens. You hear these great stories on Dakota Datebook, Madeline's movie reviews, the Plainsfolk essays. It all comes at a cost. We're asking you to help us make that happen at 800-359-4145. Still to come on Main Street, we are going to do our news discussion with Dave Thompson, and we'll have a movie review from Madeline. But now it's time for the news.
Good afternoon from the Prairie Public Newsroom. I'm Todd McDonald. A day-long symposium today in Fargo marking the start of a new center for collaboration and advancement in pharmacy.
We want to collaborate with other healthcare professionals, pharmacists across the state, all different stakeholders and entities to advance health in with not only our state, but the region as well as the country.
Elizabeth Skoy is Associate Professor of Pharmacy Practice with North Dakota State University. She says by getting the stakeholders together with pharmacists, the groups can not only learn what projects the pharmacists are working on, but also provide input on what the needs are around the state.
And the reason we're bringing in these different stakeholders is we know there's ideas we haven't even thought of. There's ideas of different collaborations that we haven't even thought of, two different entities coming together to make an impact. So we're hoping to gather that from today. And then once we have that information gathered, we're having next steps of following up with them. We just hired a director of operations for our center who's going to be working with those groups and trying to get some of the momentum that we gave, get from here to keep that moving forward.
Skoy says through collaboration, researchers and those on the front lines will be able to find better outcomes. And the state health department has increased demand and limited supply of COVID-19 treatments, leading to a change in how the treatment will be distributed. It's called monoclonal antibody treatment. Department of Health Resource and Response Chief Tim Wiedrick says instead of healthcare providers ordering it directly, the health department will get allocations.
We'll be in contact with the healthcare providers. They'll be placing orders in terms of what the requests are. But the federal government will determine the quantities that will be allocated based on our utilization rates.
Wiedrick says the first order will be going out today.
So there were about 1,600 courses that were pending request from North Dakota healthcare facilities prior to the movement to the allocation process. And now that we have the allocation process, we're anticipating about 380 courses will actually be provided to us next week. So we're still gathering additional information about how much we physically have in state. But again, I think it's reasonable to anticipate that we will have demand that will exceed the amount that's being allocated.
Wiedrick says the department is now checking to see what the state has on hand in terms of monoclonal antibody courses.
It's important for people to remember that the best protection against severe illness and hospitalization is death from COVID-19 is still the vaccination process. But monoclonal antibodies for those that have become ill has been a very effective treatment.
That's Department of Health Resources and Response Chief Tim Wiedrick. From the Prairie Public Newsroom, I'm Todd McDonald.
That is the sound of a teletype machine, something that you used to need to have to work in a newsroom. Now you need things like podcasting and the ability to stream live and multiple studios across a single state. You just heard Dave Thompson. He has gone from reading off of a teletype machine to doing live streams because he's been here 40 years.
Yes.
Because Prairie Public has been here 40 years because of member support. We are in our September member drive, and we're asking you to take just a minute of your time to give a little bit of your financial resources, anything that works in your budget to help us out. You can do this at prairiepublic.org, or you can call or text the word donate to 800-359-4145. And Dave, we have you on Fridays to look back at the week's biggest news stories and provide a little bit of context and analysis. Mm-hmm. And so I want to start with tribal leaders across the state pushing for legislative sub-districts. So how would this work?
This is what happens when you have a district. You have one senator and two House members. They're all elected across the district. But you can do sub-districts, and what they're saying is, okay, in areas of special concern, let's create a sub-district, especially on reservations. That was pushed by Standing Rock. There's talk about the three affiliated tribes. It was pushed also at Spirit Lake that they need to have a chance at more of their own representation in the legislature, and this is one way of doing that.
When you say areas of special concern, what kind of process is it to get that designation?
Actually, it's not a bad process. The legislature will have to approve it because it's allowed in state law. But there is going to be some pushback by some people because they believe that it should be just one district. And there is a lot of argument that in the cases where Native American population is growing, and that's been for a while growing, and where Native American population has grown, maybe they should have their own representative. So I think it's an interesting concept.
So would it be adding a representative, or would it be making sure that one of the existing representatives has to be a member of one of the tribes in the state?
No, they don't have to be a member, but they would be elected from a tribal area.
Okay.
And it would be one of the two that's already in place right now. Again, you have to win the election to get this done, but that's a possibility.
Another story from this week. There is, gosh, I can't even imagine what it's like to be on a school board right now. And there is this worry that a lot of school board members are not going to seek reelection, most of it because of what they're calling COVID burnout?
Yes, they're getting whipsawed because if they want to put masks in, there's going to be a group that's going to come and protest. If they have no mask mandate, there's another group that's going to come in and protest. And they're saying they're just getting beat up a lot, that, you know, they've become the epicenter for a lot of these anti-maskers, pro-maxers, anti-vaxxers, pro-vaxxers, that type of thing.
Yeah, it just – I mean – The idea of being in between a rock and a hard place, like, hardly even starts to sum up what they must be having to go through.
No, and I've talked to a number of school board members that I know, and they're saying that, you know, it's telling because they're getting emails, they're getting phone calls, and they're getting a lot of angry people just, you know, shouting both sides at them. Yeah. And they say, you know, is it worth it? Maybe I could be better off if I'd spend the time with my family.
Right.
School board members are not getting rich by any stretch of imagination in North Dakota. So I know there is a major concern there.
Yeah. There are nearly 50 evacuees from Afghan who are headed this direction.
Right. What happened is Lutheran Immigration and Resettlement Services has submitted a proposal to the U.S. State Department to resettle some of these people. And that was approved, and they got 49 will be coming to North Dakota. And they're going to be placed in North Dakota through the Afghan Placement and Assistance Program. Mm. Now, one of the things that attracted some of the people to North Dakota is that we have pretty strong English as a second language classes. Mm. And we think that a lot of these people from Afghanistan will be coming to settle in Fargo. So that might be an interesting – and they're, so far, the state is welcoming them with open arms because these are all legal and they've been fully vetted.
Hmm. Yeah. Is this one of those they have full refugee status, or is evacuee you know, more of an emergency kind of designation?
I think a little bit of both, but a lot of them do have full refugee status.
Wow. You have a couple stories this week from the Small Business Administration, one that they are – confident about small business, but also the other story is we need a little bit better focus on disaster plans. And this is not specific to the pandemic, though it did grow out of, oh, we need to think about what can happen
exactly.
when bad things happen.
Exactly.
Okay.
And they have some very good recommendations about disaster plans. Make sure your employees buy into it and the employees know what the plan is.
There's
also,
that.
There's that. Plus, you have to have a real chain of command. Who's going to do what in what circumstance? What decisions are going to be made and how that's going to be handed down? And then there's got to be a plan for when things start settling down, how are you going to roll out reopening? Is it going to be kind of slow, or is it going to be a little bit faster? Can you get your employees on board, and can you get your customers on board?
And then there is this idea, too, of risk assessment. You need to be aware of, are you in a flood-prone area, and how does that change a disaster plan?
Right, and when talking to the SBA people, they said some people were caught off guards when flash floods or a tornado hits because they didn't have a disaster plan. So they're trying to, you know, best practices, get a disaster plan in place and follow it.
You have another story this week from the fact that there is still some work to be done at the State Capitol building to get compliance for the Americans with Disabilities Act. And I guess my first question about this is, how have they not reached this level of compliance when this kind of law has been around for decades now?
Well, again, this was a historic building built in the 30s, so there were some grandfather clauses that brought them in.
Hmm.
But there has been a real movement to make sure that it is an inclusive building. So now you have to go through some architecture changes. And at the same time, and this is no secret to anybody, the supply chain situation right now is really tough.
Yeah.
They're waiting for these sliding doors, these opening sliding doors to in the main entrance. They've been on order for a few months, and it may be a few more months before they get there because there's a lot of demand and there's not a lot of supply.
Wow. You had a story that you just posted today about monoclonal antibody treatments.
Right. This is a treatment that is given to somebody who was diagnosed in the early stages of COVID, but may be on a path to have a severe case. And there's been a lot of good results from treating people with this kind of course of treatment. Mm. Well, their demand is growing. As you can see, the cases of COVID are growing. And now there is a nationwide shortage of it. So instead of like a hospital saying, we'll order it and we'll get all the ones we need, there has to be more of a regional approach. So the state health department is going to be the one placing the order. And they've had requests for 1,600, and they're thinking they may get less than 400 doses.
Wow.
So, and this is an interesting situation statewide. But, of course, the health department would always like to remind you that the best way to avoid this is to get vaccinated. That's what they say.
Well, it's just fascinating, this supply chain interruptions from sliding doors to antibodies.
So, yes.
Yeah, we rely on Dave Thompson to keep on top of all of the latest news. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Ashley.
From one radio station to a network covering the entire region, Prairie Public has been connecting North Dakotans to the world and each other for 40 years. Prairie Public started because of a demand for quality non-commercial programming and a need for fact-centered, trusted journalism. It's here today because listeners loved and valued it enough to invest in it. Listener support has always been Prairie Public's bedrock and most dependable source of funding. Let's add your name to the list. Become a sustaining member of Prairie Public right now. It's so easy. Just go to prairiepublic.org, or you can call or text the word donate to 800-359-4145. Contribute $15 a month and we'll send you a commemorative pair of 40th anniversary Prairie Public socks and a retro 1980s Prairie Public coffee mug. Whether it's been 40 years or 4 days, thank you for listening. We hope we can count on your support.
When you hear the fanfare, you know it is time for another movie review with our in-house movie critic, Matt Olien. Matt, thanks for joining us.
Of course, Ashley.
And you have been off to see The Card Counter.
This is the new film from writer-director Paul Schrader. Now, Schrader has a long career in Hollywood. He really got known by writing Taxi Driver and Raging Bull for Martin Scorsese. So he started out as a screenwriter with those two big screenplays that got him into directing. His directing career has been a little up and down. First Reformed, which he did a couple years ago with Amanda Seyfried and Ethan Hawke, was really good. But he also directed Lindsay Lohan's attempted comeback from the dregs of her career, and that did not go well. This one is about a guy who comes out of prison, played by Oscar Isaac, one of my favorite actors, and he learns how to count cards in prison. And he's going to put that to the test by playing blackjack, playing poker, testing his skills out on the road. And I would call this film almost a masterpiece if he could have finished it. Mm-hmm. The third act is when things unravel. One of the hardest things to do in movies, Ashley, is to finish a movie. So many movies I've watched over the years, they start out great. They got a great idea. And then it just can't finish it. But it starts great. I mean, there's some great scenes with Oscar Isaac narrating to the audience about how he learned how to count cards. And it's intricate and it's exacting. And he's sitting there playing. He talks about winning but not winning too big, because then the casinos will figure out that you're card counting. So it's when it sticks to the card playing and life on the road, staying in dingy motels, casinos, I love that part of it. I can get into all of that. There's a side plot that involves his seeking redemption over crimes he committed in the Iraq War. And I'm not going to go into that because people need to see that, what it is. It's a key part of this film. Along the way, he meets a young man on the road, played by Ty Sheridan, who Oscar Isaac kind of takes under his wing. By the way, Oscar Isaac's character's name is William Tell. That's his kind of made-up character name.
Yeah, that's and a nice name for a poker player.
Yeah, and he takes this character named Kirk, played by Ty Sheridan, under his wing as kind of almost a redemption thing, because Oscar Isaac's character is looking for redemption. He's looking to start his life again. He's looking to move on from the horrible things he did in the Iraq War. Along the way, he meets Tiffany Haddish, who is kind of she's looking for good poker players for investors to invest in. So they begin this partnership. Might be more than a partnership. You'll have to go see the movie. She wants to invest in him because he's a good poker player and she wants to get him into the top games and things like that. So that's what the film's about. It's a lot of card playing. I love those scenes, but it's also about him trying to kickstart the life of this young man he meets on the road. And they go on the road and they travel through casinos. And it's about him seeking redemption from what he did in Iraq. So I don't mind that side plot, but that side plot is what kind of unravels the movie in the third act. Willem Dafoe is in this movie as well. He plays a key part and he's a key link to what happened in Iraq. But again, I think if they would have stuck the film to like The Cincinnati Kid or The Hustler, which were two really good movies made in the 60s about poker with Cincinnati Kid and The Hustler about pool playing with Paul Newman. I love that kind of motif of this professional on the road, playing cards, shooting pool, dingy areas that they're playing. And that's all great. I love that. It just didn't quite finish the way I wanted it to finish.
You know, I think about baseball sometimes and you have to, at the very end, bring in a closing pitcher. I wonder what would happen if they brought in a closing director.
You know, that's a great question, Ashley, because I saw the movie with my friend Brent Brandt and he said the same thing. He said sometimes when a writer-director is the auteur of the film. Nobody really to edit them, nobody to really give advice to. It's all on them. And sometimes I think a second set of eyes, a third set of eyes can come in and say, I don't think I would end the film that way, Paul. Huh. My biggest complaint, Ashley, with the third act is William Tell, Isaac's character, makes choices that I did not think were consistent with the character that I had seen up to this point. Okay? That was my problem with the choices he makes in the third act. I just did not see him doing that. It makes no sense to me really why he did what he did in the third act. Mm-hmm. But yes, second, third set of eyes, I think, work sometimes in movies. The Irishman, Martin Scorsese's film from 2019, clocks in at 3.5 hours long on Netflix. He could have shaved 40 minutes off that thing, but no one is there to tell Martin Scorsese no.
Right,
and as talented as he is, I would have shaved 40 minutes off that movie, and I would have ended this movie very differently as well. Let me say about Oscar Isaac. He gives the best performance in the movie. I thought Tiffany Haddish might have been slightly miscast in her role.
She's mostly comedic. Okay.
It's a little uncomfortable, although she and Oscar Isaac have good chemistry. Ty Sheridan, I wasn't wild about his performance. Willem Dafoe is always interesting on screen. But Isaac is so good, and I tell you what, I would not want to play poker with Oscar Isaac. He has a poker face. You can't tell what he's thinking. He plays against these guys, Ashley, that have hoodies and dark glasses on, and that's what poker players do who don't want to give away their face. He's just sitting there with his face. Try to guess what I'm thinking. He's got a great poker face. He's a wonderful actor. He'll be in Dune this fall, the big remake of Dune. He's in that. He's one of my favorite actors, born in Guatemala, and he's really made it big. So I think I would recommend this movie, especially for people that like card playing and poker and kind of that portrait of a drifter, a loner type movie. But I didn't like the third act.
All right. Well, I'm going to go into some Oscar trivia. Paul Schrader, the director of this film, picked up his Oscar nomination. You already mentioned the film, First Reformed. Give me the other Best Original Screenplay Oscar nominees for that year.
Oh, was that 2019,
Ashley?
Yeah,
the 2019 Oscars.
Oh,
yep.
Boy. That's a hard category sometimes for me. No, that's okay. I don't want to take up too much of the listeners' time here. 2019. So I would say that Tarantino for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I got the wrong year.
Either that, or that was an adapted screenplay.
I think that was off of Tarantino's head. The Favorite was the Favorite,
yep,
in there. Okay,
the
so this
in
is
there.
Films released in 2018. Okay, got it. So The Favorite, First Reformed.
Mm-hmm.
I would say Vice, the film with Christian Bale as Dick Cheney.
Yep.
Green Book. Is
yep.
Green Book in
Green
there?
Book,
oh, I got
yep.
four.
That's
wow.
Winner. Yeah, the other one is a kind of tomato.
A kind of tomato.
I'm sure that's not what the film is about. Roma.
Roma. I did not like Roma. Hey, I got four.
Hey, that is amazing for original screenplay from a couple of years ago. Well, that is the kind of expertise that you expect out of Matt Olien. We like to bring in passionate, and I'm just going to say occasionally quirky people, people who have these incredible hobbies. You hear interviews with passionate, intelligent, engaged people during the day throughout Main Street. And we're asking you to support that now during our September member drive. Public radio has always been about audience participation. We come to you a couple times a year, ask for your help in paying for the service that you depend on. We're here with fact-based journalism, eye-opening conversation, and music that you don't find anywhere else. It's easy to become a sustaining member. Call or text the word donate to 800-359-4145 or click and join at prairiepublic.org.
And also, Ashley, you can give online quickly and conveniently at prairiepublic.org, as you have mentioned. Quirky, that's a nice way to refer to me. We had a membership manager years ago that referred to me as the Rain Man. So I thought that was a perfect with this Oscar nonsense that I'm able to spoo out. So a little Rain Man-ish, a little quirky, but we love people like that, don't we, Ashley?
Yeah, we do.
To interview them on radio. You've probably had many of those public radio driveway moments. I've had them as well when I get home listening to Main Street or All Things Considered, when an interview was so compelling you couldn't get out of the car. That's a listening experience we're asking you to place a value on today as you're listening. There's so much work behind the scenes to appreciate. Ashley and Skip Wood do such a great job. And of course, Doug, who's out on medical leave. We don't want you to ever think about how much Ashley and Doug put into their preparation. You guys make it look easy.
Lots.
It's a lot. And they read books and find out all they can about a topic or the guests. And that's reflected in the insightful, curious questions you hear from them. Guests oftentimes are delighted and surprised at a well-thought-out question. Ashley, you do such a great job with that kind of stuff.
Thank you.
Just this once, we do want you to think about and show your appreciation for the work that leads to delightful and insightful conversations on Main Street. Call or text donate to 800-359-4145 or give at prairiepublic.org.
And this is the first day of our September member drive. We have a dollar-for-dollar match. I always say, whatever you can afford to donate, you can afford to have somebody else donate more. So if you come in at just 10 bucks a month, that gets doubled by the time it reaches us. It's at $20 a month. 800-359-4145. Or go to prairiepublic.org. $10 a month, a very normal amount. That's our most common giving level. It helps to pay for all of the news, information, and conversation that you hear on Prairie Public. Prairie Public only works with member participation. Contribute now, prairiepublic.org, or call or text donate to 800-359-4145.
And you can show your appreciation for everything that goes into Main Street, Ashley, the time and preparation of our hosts and our unsung hero, our producer, Skip Wood, who I do think would like the card counter. Skip's a poker player. It's a very interesting movie. I think Skip would enjoy it, but Skip does such a great job behind the scenes. I've been friends with him for 30 plus years, going back to our TV days, all the scheduling, editing, and equipment that sometimes needs little TLC, all of it made possible because of listeners like you. That's a lot of hard work that goes into Main Street. You also listen for the voices of your companions, your friends on the radio, who are just as curious as you are about so many things. That curiosity, that interest is reflected in their voices. Support Ashley and Doug's work right now at prairiepublic.org. Or call or text to donate to 800-359-4145.
This is Dakota Datebook for September 17th. Ask anyone old enough to remember the polio years, and they will probably recall waiting in line to take a vaccine on a sugar cube. Dr. Jonas Salk gets a lot of credit for developing a vaccine to defeat polio. But this oral vaccine came out years afterward, developed by his rival, Dr. Albert Sabin. polio was a menacing disease that could paralyze and even kill. Young children were most susceptible. Images of children in leg braces, crutches, wheelchairs, and iron lungs were horrifying. The National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis led the March of Dimes, which collected donations for vaccine research and patient care. Salk's vaccine was welcomed with open arms when it rolled out in 1955. By 1958, about 90% of North Dakota children younger than 10 had had two polio shots. The Salk vaccine was administered in a series of three shots. The first two provided 80 to 90% immunity. The polio virus was beginning to fade. North Dakota had a record 492 polio cases in 1946. By 1961, the number had dropped to four, the lowest since North Dakota's record-keeping on polio began in 1924. 1961 was also significant for another reason. Salk's shot was about to be replaced as the Sabin vaccine debuted. On this date, the following year, the Bismarck Tribune reported that nearly 30,000 people in Burley and Morton counties received their first dose of the new vaccine, all in 6 hours on a Sunday afternoon called Sabin Oral Sunday. The clinics were open to everyone 3 months and older. Hundreds of volunteers ran 13 vaccination clinics at schools and public buildings in Bismarck, Mandan, Flasher, Glen Ullin, Sterling, and Wing. Mobile units brought the vaccine to shut-ins, hospital patients, and nursing home residents. Organizers asked for 25 cents per dose, but otherwise the vaccinations were free. Polio was mostly stomped out in North Dakota by 1965, with at least two cases in the 1970s. In 1975, the legislature passed a school immunization law for polio and other diseases. Polio has been eradicated in the U.S. since 1979. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Jack Dura. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
Just one last reminder in today's Main Street to let you know about our Fall Member Drive and the role that you can play in helping to make sure that coverage like this stays on the air. You can make your investment at prairiepublic.org. Or you can pick up that phone and call or text the word donate to 800-359-4145. Coming up Monday on Main Street, a sense of place. That's the theme of the recent One Book, One North Dakota conversation recorded at a Humanities North Dakota event. And we will share that conversation between writers Mark Vins, Deb Marquardt, and the Pulitzer Prize-winning Louise Erdrich. That's Monday. Until then, enjoy your weekend.